This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
The official Dirty South Soccer podcast.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Talking all things Atlanta United FC.
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
We are
the Mouths of the South.
The South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
What's up, Atlanta? This is the Mouths of the South podcast brought to you by Dirty South Soccer, the SB Nation page, where you can find all your latest and future rumor news regarding Atlanta United and all things Atlanta United or Atlanta soccer. Jay Riddle, Josh Bagrianski.
What's up, guys?
And Josh, I'll start with you.
Oh, wonderful. I love to go first.
Thank God.
On a scale of a single tear rolling down the cheek.
What? You're asking about crying already?
To,
I know where this is going.
Ace Ventura crying in the shower because he realized he's made out with Ray Finkel.
Right, right.
How hard did you cry after Atlanta United's PK loss to the Columbus Crew?
Wow, I can't believe that you're right away going to ask me if I cried.
And the worst part about it is that I can't see the awkwardness in your face because it's blocked by the computer screen. It's okay.
You don't want to see. But I turned red there.
Isn't that just his face, okay, though?
Honestly, I may or may not have taken a personal day on Friday.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Gosh, I wish I had that power.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to, but I
The funny thing is I work on appointments, and about half my clients were like, you don't want to.
What are you doing?
You don't. Yeah, they weren't getting any performance out of me on that day.
You're
after,
like, ma'am,
for sure.
I am not lugging my massage bed over there tonight.
But I'm telling you, like, half of them were like, you must be a mess. You do not want to come in today, do you? So I already had the opportunity to get out, but man, it was a tough loss, and I'm glad we're doing this a week later. I've had some time to reflect on what a special season it was and kind of get past what was just a devastating way to have the season finish.
And I've had more time to shove it deeper down.
Oh, Jay, God. I see that you are indeed wearing sleeves once again.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, in mourning?
As one friend said, the arms are in hibernation for the winter until the preseason. So
gun shows
no
more.
I might throw on a tank here and there, but I think I'm going to leave that. I'm going to leave that for the season.
So when you see the tank top again, you know the time
know
is near.
It's on.
Okay.
It's on.
But let's start this with happy things because I mean we obviously. By this point, everyone knows what's going on. Everyone knows we're out of the playoffs. It's not a surprise. You lose, what was it, 3-1 to Pete and PKs to Columbus Crew? Was that the final score? Mm-hmm.
Someone was counting? Ugh.
We
lost.
It was a sad day, but really a momentous day. I mean, you heard it on the broadcast a couple times. You've heard it from really anyone who watched the game who isn't a soccer fan. That was one of the better nil-no draws I've ever seen. I've ever witnessed. It's a shame that the outcome didn't go Atlanta United's way because that was one of those games where it could have turned really ugly in Atlanta's favor for like really early, and it just didn't go that way. But before we get to not to do this.
Yeah, what?
You're terrible at this.
What just happened here?
I don't know. I got into a stream of consciousness, and I just kind of roll with it. The Firefly flashlight things.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm.
Someone explain that to me because I still have no idea what that was, and it was the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life.
So, Josh, you probably saw it starting to happen quick because you're closer to that the supporter section.
Yeah. Were you in your bougie club seats?
I was in my club seats with my wife and Toyota football.
Oh, okay. That is super bougie.
Because he's in my row.
Yeah.
We didn't notice it right
super
away.
Bougie.
And then I don't think, I mean, I would say one out of three people in our section kind of grabbed onto
it. Cool.
Yeah, and threw up their flashlight. I know that I didn't know what happened until I watched, I came over and listened to a friend, Kevin Cheek, with Terminus Legion. It was one of the capos on the stand that's always waving the big flag around. Mm-hmm. And he was talking to Atlanta United Fan TV about that moment. And it turned out that he had been inspired by, he lives in Athens, so he was inspired by something that happened similarly at a college football game. So he just held up his kind of phone with the flashlight, and people just took off.
Well, that was the coolest part about it, was that it was not planned. It was completely organic, and that was something I wanted.
Yeah, there was no like supporters groups getting together and planning this.
Not that I'm like in the know with all things. I really don't know anything that's going on.
You know nothing.
Exactly. That's why we got Jay here. But no, I saw that happening. I look up, and I mentioned this before we started recording, but you know how when you guys see something happen on the field and have no idea what's going on? Well, me in the press box, I typically know what's going on because I either have the TV broadcast on or I have, you know,
like with VAR,
Chris Winkler behind me explaining what's going on. In this case, it was a complete opposite where I had no idea what the hell was going on, and you guys seemed to know.
Were people just looking at each other in the press box?
Yeah, we were like, "What the hell is this? Was this planned?" Like, I mean, it was really, really cool to watch because you know. They really started with just one Kevin Cheek, right? That was it.
Yeah, I mean,
he started the entire thing.
And it just went around the stadium.
Congratulations, good job, Kevin Cheek.
And
man.
It was
that was awesome.
It was just special. I mean, you've seen it basically broadcast all around the world as an awesome fan moment. And yeah, I mean, goosebumps every time I watch that video. And something that we've talked about throughout the year, Eric, is, you know, there's been all this talk about creating traditions in terms of chants, things like that. And one thing that I've heard a lot of the leadership, particularly, you know, the capos, and saying that a lot of that stuff comes organically over time. And that's how it happens. And we just created an awesome tradition for ourselves. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, every game we should see when We Ready happens is sung before the kickoff. We should see the fireflies come out.
I was thinking, how does this become not we, because you guys do this.
You weren't doing it.
I'm not including
this.
Not that I don't want to be. Don't get me wrong. I would love to be, but I never mind. how is this incorporated into a regular season moving on to next year? How is this incorporated into the
atmosphere
of the game?
The response seemed to be, I hope we don't do this except for the playoffs.
It will be a special, right?
Connection. I don't know. It seems like if it becomes too orchestrated, you know, at this point, people know the Viking clap. Other teams do it. Seattle's got it at the beginning of matches.
That's a worldwide thing.
That sort of stuff. This is something that is not unique to sports. We know I think like a few days later, Copa 90 ended up tweeting out that another team over in Europe or England did the same thing. I'd hate for it to just be replicated all the time or orchestrated by the supporter section or supporters groups in every game at the 87th minute, we're going to do this.
Here's the thing I was thinking is if Atlanta United is ever, well, and they will be, I'm not saying they won't ever be, but in the future when they're in a position where they need a kind of a pick-me-up, that might be a good place to do it would be a universal sign that, hey, from the fans, let's go. We got you. We're behind you. Let's get it going.
And I guarantee
this
you
to
that
pump you up. That's just one idea. Look, however this ends up being incorporated, if it does, and if it doesn't, that's fine as well, because this was still an amazing moment, and it's something I'm not going to forget for a long, long time, if
really
ever.
Special. Really special.
It was, but like you said, it was one of the first real organic things that
came out of nowhere
that you were like, wow, this could be something that happens from the future, in the future. And who knows? I mean, it's, you know.
I will give you guys one juicy nugget about my inability to use technology at that moment. So
do you not know how to turn on your flashlight?
Well,
are you kidding?
It's worse than that. So, you know, I may have had a few beverages and, you know, it was a stressful moment. The game was going on and, you know, I'm doing the thing with my phone and our season ticket group is divided into two rows and one of my buddies in front of me just takes my phone and turns it around. So I was holding the home screen forward towards the field instead of the other side with the flashlight. So that was a bit embarrassing. I mean, I just figured, you know, you light your phone up, but it's a specific thing with the flashlight.
Good job, Josh.
As I learned, I caught on, though.
Would you think people just had super powerful screens?
Gosh, you literally think he was probably making this up.
Why is everybody's phone screen so bright?
That is 100% true. Because I can see that so-and-so just texted you. How did you know? Because I'm looking at your screen.
Now, I will say, because this is technically not a TIFO, I'm going to go ahead and say that there have been conversations behind the scenes where I think people inquired with some tech-minded folks about the ability to change the phone screen's color programmatically or make it an easy way for someone to like have an app hit a button. And
so it's like a red light instead of a white
light. So you
could
have multiple colors and stuff
like
that.
But
that's apparently very, very difficult with the way the IOs are in phones and stuff. So I don't know how possible that would be.
They ever think about just turning the
phone around? Well, it's not bright enough.
Gotcha.
So you'd have to do the flashlight, and so the flashlights don't have really that capability. Or if it is, it's probably you're probably causing a manufacturer warranty issues with your phone or something.
Yes, that's going to be problematic.
We did this awesome thing, but 70,000 people can now not return their phones.
But it was fun.
I will, on the opposite side of that, though, it was kind of bizarre because I was in the club section. So, you know, you do have a lot more. I mean, there are a lot of fans around me who this is their first year really attending soccer. And, I mean, I'm the first to admit I didn't even follow the MLS Cup final last year. I could care less. So I'm new to MLS. But I've been watching soccer, going to soccer matches around the world for a long time. So it was very strange when, like, we went to overtime and people were like, yeah! Yeah. Woo!
Yeah.
We got this. And I'm like, no. No. And then we were going to the penalty. Same thing. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And I'm like, I have never supported a team that's won penalties.
Yeah, that's
like, it just, like, so.
That's how you knew people were very excited about penalties.
Yeah.
That is the biggest flaw in the game of soccer. And it is a necessary evil, but
timeout.
What a crapshoot
timeout
to decide who advances.
Yeah.
It would be less of a flaw and much more definitive if it were old school MLS shootout PKs.
And everybody had to put on a giant wig.
And that takes some skills.
Start from midfield.
Yeah. Like an Alexi Lalas wig, and you have to take it like, with that.
Spin around five times.
Yeah. You guys laugh. Yeah, but that takes so much more skill, and it's so much harder.
I totally agree.
Dribble
up penalties.
It's less determined by luck. There's less luck involved. You know, there is skill when it comes to, you know, hitting a PK. And for a goalkeeper to save a PK, but
it's a crap
there
shoot.
Is a
there's so many variables that
enormous variable that equates to just luck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is taken away when you do these MLS shootouts. That's a different podcast.
And I don't believe in
topic
in,
for a podcast.
In,
I'm not...
in having luck in, like I said, penalty kicks, because I've never look, witnessed a PK where my team's like goes through. It was typically they end up losing even if they played better.
There's a solution to all this. You know, hit one of the back of the net in regulation.
Or, you know, not have Columbus's keeper, who was, you know, a non-entity for the majority of the season, just stand on his head over the last few weeks, including the PKs. So, yeah. So Columbus, obviously, their right players peaked at the right time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was also a part of it as well, because Gressel had a perfectly fine penalty. It would have gone in.
That's
80%
best
of the time.
Penalty kick saves I've ever seen.
The one that hit
the very
it was
first
one. That went basically. Yeah, I felt so bad for him because I mean you can't place it better
how
than
get
that.
Down so quickly, Stefan.
He just picked right.
He's a monster man.
He guessed right.
What's the secret water that they use in Space Jam?
Why are you squeezing your hand like that?
Because it's the bottle. Never mind.
Between that and Josh's juicy nuggets, moving on.
I'm full of juicy nuggets,
oh,
Jay.
Oh, Lord, I'm cringing. Sorry.
Oh, shoot, what was I going to say?
Well, what did you think of Lorenowitz's penalty?
He has a lot of experience taking penalties. We know he likes to go for power. It happens.
I just was amusing that the keeper was like, I wonder if someone's going to try to go down the middle after Higuain, you know.
Panenka'd it.
Oh, wow. I mean, did Higuain go first?
I think so.
That really set the tone when you miss your first penalty and then you have
second.
A guy come up and Panenka. Did he go second?
I don't
second?
Know, dude. I honestly couldn't even watch the PKs because I was so – I literally, before we sat down and recorded this, I watched the condensed version on MLS Live because I haven't been able to just – get around to watching it again.
It's on not my, because it's I, sitting on my DVR.
It's not because
I don't know why.
It's not a matter of time. I just physically. It's almost like the Super Bowl. I just can't watch it.
Well,
like
I remember texting with you guys on Monday, and I was like, I can't.
We need another day.
This is not going to happen.
We need another.
But not only that, I mean, I was exhausted just from. It's like the whole season of doing these 9-10 hour days of tailgates twice a week. You know, the playoff match, which, by the way, the attendance to our tailgate for the playoff match was amazing. For a weekday and short notice to have 67,000 to break that MLS playoff record for attendance. But anyways, it's like it all hit me at once. And I was just exhausted. I was so exhausted. I just felt like I couldn't do anything. Couldn't do anything properly that day. So it wasn't just that. I just it just took the sail went out of my sails. I think I was operating on pure adrenaline the last 2.5 weeks before the playoff game because of the sheer rhythm of matches taking place.
I mean, we had a unique experience as fans for a lot of different reasons this year. Obviously, the team being new and the way the city embraced soccer. But in terms of how the matches came. We had the first half of the season where, you know, you'd get into Bobby Dodd every couple weeks, once a month, and you knew you had to really do it big because you weren't going to get to see the team for another few weeks at home. And then all of a sudden you come to Mercedes-Benz, and it's twice a week for a month. And then
it's intense.
And then you go to the playoffs.
It was
play 120 minutes. I mean, it was a grind all season long.
I can't tell if we were spoiled in the fact that we had so many games in Mercedes-Benz Stadium that because, I mean, who else has ever experienced something like that where they twice a week can go to a soccer game, you know,
well,
for their
hometown? Well, most teams can't fill it that a stadium that
exactly.
many
well,
games.
That too.
They would have lost so much money with that many weekday games in a row.
Right, and I think as a fan, I'm happy to see a more normal schedule come next season, especially because I thought it was very hard on the players, but I will never forget all the unique moments that the season brought, and that was one of them, seeing 6-7 games in September in Mercedes-Benz and seeing the team play just fantastically.
Well, like you
said,
Eric, you watched one of the highlight videos somebody made of all the goals, and there was just a segment that was probably could have been it could have probably been DC United's entire video was our one segment where we scored like 15 goals in like four games.
I mean, it became so easy.
I remember looking at the schedule or looking back at the schedule thinking, oh my gosh, whatever that month was, we must have scored like 15, 16 goals in a matter of three or four games. I'm trying to find the scores right now. Hold on.
Getting quite a few clean sheets.
The 7-0 against New England. I mean, seven of those goals.
7-0, 4-0, 3-0.
You know, that's half DC United's goal count.
You know, we make fun of DC United, and then I'm like, oh, wait a second.
Yeah.
They beat us three times.
I remember thinking, oh, here it was. It was the 3-0 win over FC Dallas, the 7-0 win over New England Revolution. It was a 3-3 draw against Orlando City at home. I'm not really worried about the goals that were scored against us, but the three that we scored.
No, we're just counting our goals at this
4-0 against LA. 2-0 against Montreal the next week, or the next game. 3-0 against. I mean, it was
pretty much up until we went on two of those away games to New England. Yeah.
That is insane. And I think.
Even against Minnesota, we had four.
And look, that was my. And it
was
a
good game. Yeah.
I was hoping we'd do this later, but we can go ahead and do it now. Like, your favorite moments of this season. Because for everyone, there was at least for me, there were moments in the season where I look back now and I think that was it. That's when I knew Atlanta had kind of captured this soccer thing that was going on and had made it one of its own.
Well, then let's pull out, before we do the team awards later, we'll pull out two of those. We'll do game of the year. It could be any reason why you remember the game. It could be the tailgate before, whatever. And then goal for you.
To me, it was the game of the year. It was Martinez's hat trick against Chicago. Mm-hmm. The three goals he scored were the runs, the timing, the finishes were some of the most impressive goals I've ever seen.
And see, that's where my goal of the year is his impossible angle.
Yeah,
that's where I woke up and was like, "Dude, this team is legit."
That game, it was. The Minnesota United game and the Chicago Fire game, and I know that Minnesota and both games had very, very weird set of circumstances, but to be able to do the things that they did
Minnesota
in those games.
Just felt like we were beating up a broken child.
No,
it
did, but here's the
like
thing.
Like an orphan. Yeah.
Play Minnesota, that Minnesota, against, you know, a carbon copy of Minnesota, which is what you would assume expansion team would look like.
Right.
Two expansion teams coming in at the same time.
And then they end up actually even doing in the top three, like, that best years of an expansion team at the end of the season.
But I mean,
thing.
Play the first Minnesota United team we played, Atlanta United played. You do a FIFA, you know, match, quick match, where you're playing the same, you're both the same teams. You play that team against each other, and it's like a 2-1 win that's close up until the end. And with Atlanta United, it obviously wasn't. And that's when I was like, oh, my gosh, this could be a real thing in Atlanta. Then it was compounded or the exclamation point was put on that in Chicago the next week. And I understand there's a weird set of circumstances, but to be able to do the things they did, even down or up a man, even playing in the snow,
and
that's exactly when I was like, oh, my gosh, this is going
to
be amazing.
We saw those two back-to-back matches. At the very least, this team was going to play an exciting brand of soccer. At the very least, going forward, scoring goals. So I can definitely see that. For me, it's the Houston game, which is a mix of
that's
you know, the fan That game was delayed by like an hour and a half.
We were the fans were spread out in different parking garages and all over the place.
Yeah, I was under the varsity deck. Everyone was enjoying it. There was a my buddy and I decided to we had to carry the keg from our tailgate under the varsity parking deck. So we got pretty
continue
soaked.
The party there. Yeah.
And but then we became, you know, the life of the party, you know, so we're hanging out under the parking deck, you get the hour delay, you get the anthem, the situation with the anthem. And the game starts late, and it was just a great atmosphere. And
that's
we get
that's my game too. You know, because I came from the tailgate, and then literally was in the tunnel when it began to flood, and we called the Great Tunnel Flood in 2017.
Yeah, the Great Tunnel Flood.
Where it was like 4 inches of water just start flushing. Like
how
flushing
quickly
down.
Did it flood?
So we were in there. We were standing in there. The march had just started. Uh-huh. We had to pause and wait because of the delay. Uh-huh. And so they had us just waiting in this tunnel, which is really claustrophobic if you're just standing in there. And then the heat coming off the humidity just made it even more claustrophobic because it was hard to breathe. And so we're chanting in there, and we're just going nuts, you know.
God.
And all of a sudden, you just feel this water in the back of your legs, and it's just it's a rush.
That's
as
amazing.
The sewer grates in front of the tunnel had just started to fill up, and just the water couldn't go anywhere. So that's when I sent someone to the front. Call him Jesus, Jason Wells. Sent him to the front. He's always
flattering.
He's got the helmet. He's always got the gold helmet on.
He does look like a little bit of a chubby Jesus.
He's always got the gold helmet on, and he's waving the really tall flag.
Sure.
Anyways, so I sent him forward to get us to tell him we got to get out of here before people start freaking out and causing a panic.
Right.
So then they took us to the parking garage across the street, and then we just all the drums were in there and everything, and we just continued to chant. And mm-hmm. just had people and their kids didn't know what was happening.
Right.
And it was just. You know, it was just a lot of fun.
I mean, there was basically an hour there where no one knew what was happening
right,
in general.
Yeah.
Everyone I know that went to that game as a fan had something unique.
It etched something in my mind where there's probably a series of four or five games I don't remember that much about. They all kind of bleed together. They're all kind of the same, you know, in some respect. But that was something very unique that day. What about your goal? Of the
talk about it was actually I don't know why I said a hat trick. It was a brace at Chicago. I don't know why I said a hat trick for Martinez.
That's right.
you get what I'm saying.
This is a safe place. This is a safe place.
No worries.
It's been so long I forgot that
goal,
it wasn't a hat
goal
trick.
Of the year. For me, it's Miggy's his second against Columbus, where he goes on about a 50-60 yard run and slots it
in
to
Atlanta.
The far post in Atlanta. Yeah. Puts Josh Williams on skates. I mean, that entire run. It was just a special individual goal, something you don't see at any level often. And my favorite part is watching Josh Williams just the look of horror on his face, seeing Almiron coming at him at full speed and almost falls over himself, backing up. And then Miggy slots it beautifully to the back post. There are a lot of goals that you could pick from. That one, to me, was very special. But there are a ton. I know you've got a good one, Jay, that you can select from.
And that's why I said to Eric, you know, from that same match that he talked about where Chicago came to Atlanta in around mid-March, when Joseph looked like he was running out of space and was basically going to run out of bounds and touched that ball on that impossible angle into the goal, That was incredible. That was really incredible. And that one made just the hair stand up on the back of my neck when it happened.
And a so, moment where you're like, we got quite a number nine here.
So that was I think that what really hooked me. I think I got my tattoo shortly thereafter that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's when he was
around that time.
Well, then that is goal of the season.
He was ready for the mark.
I think it's around that time I got it.
I take it back. That's goal of the season then. It inspired your tattoo.
I don't remember if I got it and was at the match and I already had it like the day before or something. Hmm. But either way, it was around that time that I got the tattoo. So if I had already had it, then I was probably very pleased.
And then he went to...
I may have made a good decision.
Then he went to Venezuela and got hurt. So you may have opened up another tattoo.
I mean,
evil portal opened up or whatever it is you guys...
You look back at that... I don't want... Well, I guess we can go ahead and do it. I hate the fact that he was hurt for so long and how much that probably impacted the season. Not that we dropped too many points, but we dropped enough points where it made a difference.
I mean, you think about how narrow to me that we are much more dangerous as a side in two legs, and we could have gotten that bye if so many different things had happened and guaranteed ourselves.
You just won one of the DC United games.
Yeah, give us one of the
or
DC United games.
Or just drawn two of the DC
Minnesota game, Jovinko being Jovinko, the final match in Toronto, the Martinez injury. I mean, there are so many moments where if we had just simply turned, whether it be a draw or a loss, into 3 points, we would be playing right now. And I think that's the frustrating part of it. Obviously, any team can probably go back and look at their season and find some moments where they were unlucky. But we were, as great a season as this was, we were so close to making this a team that's still playing today and really, really a dangerous for the title altogether.
Where we go next? Because we got to talk about Columbus a little
bit. I want to wrap the game up in a bow here. So there's two things that I want to bring up. Number one, there was a lot of vitriol after the game. Actually, that's not even true. There were some people who I saw either via social media. Obviously, some of it just came immediately after the game, so I forgive. I ignore anything that anybody says that same night of the evening. You could.
I mean,
it's about the PK order.
We're all a mess. No one remembers what they said.
As I said on, I think I called into Soccer Down Here that the next day, and I said, I kind of insulated myself during that game because I just didn't feel we didn't look good going into the penalties. I didn't think that we were going to get them. So I didn't feel much emotion that after we lost, I was kind of just taking the time to stand there. I stood there in my row for another 5 minutes, 10 minutes to reflect on the season and think back. But there were some people that already immediately drove in the next day to Tata's pick of the rotation and why did he pick it this way and that way. And to be quite frank, I mean, I've seen teams so many times go to penalties, World Cups and stuff, and they put their first two guys. Some coaches put their last two guys, and I've seen it go wrong both ways. So, the only thing that to me that came up as questionable were people talking about LGP's confidence level, that he didn't seem to look like he was doing okay. But you also, as a coach, have faith that this guy's a professional.
Yeah.
He's going to go up there and execute it. So, I mean, what's he supposed to be, a psychotherapist before penalties? And then the other thing is people saying, well, he didn't spend any time on penalties. Well, we're putting together an expansion team, guys. Maybe we have other things to focus on, team symmetry and other things like that.
No offense.
I just want to hear your thoughts on those two things.
So, you
go first.
First of all, I thought
we're basically in agreement.
I know it hurt, but I would have rather lost that way than, a goal at the death or something like that and not get to PKs.
I think it would have hurt.
Because at least we missed the first one, and you're like, the idea that we're not
scored on. I can do a PKs, but I don't like
the idea.
The
idea that we're gonna lose this game, it didn't just punch you right in the face.
Yeah.
You still had a chance, but you thought, all right, well, this is going south as of now.
Right.
Then you miss the second one. It was the second one, right?
Yeah.
You miss the second one, and you're starting to realize, okay, well, this is likely not gonna happen. You make the third one. I think you miss the fourth one again, and you're like, all right, well. At least it was a soft, instead of all at one time. Yeah, yeah. Just kind of a nice wave of loserness just kind of wafted over you.
Yeah, and, I mean, I'd be curious to hear what people who've never witnessed PKs before, what they
thought. But here's the thing. Tata spoke about the order, and Tata said, I let the players choose. I'd heard people, talk about why Almiron wasn't first. Who else would you have wanted fifth in that kind of a moment other than
I have no problem with that. Yeah.
So
Gressel wanted to go first.
No, Gressel was a good call.
And Gressel missed
that's
because
what a lot of coaches do. They go, who's the guy that wants to step, who has the confidence that wants to step up and take it first? Instead of assigning a guy who's shying in the corner and go, all right, you're taking it.
Right.
And you're like, oh, I don't want to take it.
Would you rather select your five and put them in uncomfortable positions or put them in moments where, I'd rather pick Gressel, who volunteers to go first, than Miggy. Oh, I don't want to go first.
Yeah.
Shoot.
I think Gressel's a perfect guy to go first.
But it's not about whether. But I'd rather have someone with the confidence to go first. That's why you allow these guys to pick.
And that's why he asked everyone because one thing. So I'm going to play devil's advocate for you guys in a sec, in terms of the selection. But I would go ahead and say, first of all, to the people saying they don't practice penalties a lot. They're professional players. They can score from the spot. What's difficult to recreate is 120 minutes on the pitch, surrounded by 70,000 people, cramping, right, in a pressure situation. You can't recreate that. A professional player knows how to
but
put
Josh,
the ball
that's
in
not,
the corner
that's,
from
but
the
Josh,
spot.
There's a book out explains if you practice them so many times a day, you'll get better results. Like, give me
right. That's not just tired over 120 minutes. That's tired over the last eight 10 weeks, right. whatever it is. Right.
You can't recreate that.
That is unbelievably hard.
When he said that, I loved that. I love that they don't practice penalties. And again, that indicates that he's driving home his system of playing the game and playing the game right. And that's one of the cool things about the Atlanta United brand is
we
the
don't
way
have the luxury
we
this season to be practicing time. Penalties.
We don't waste time taking penalties.
Look, here's the thing. It's not like they couldn't have practiced PKs on their own.
Yeah.
And I mean, some of the players said after the game, we do it all the time. We did it on our own. We didn't do it as a team. They don't feel – not that it isn't necessary, but it's not something that, like you said, you can't recreate that atmosphere.
Right.
You can sit there, put the ball on the spot, and kick it.
And that's
at
what
practice.
Penalties is. Who basically who's unlucky or who but you who can't, doesn't it's step a, it's up a, it's, under the pressure.
I mean, look, you can hit free throws in a gym all day long.
Right. That's
but
a good.
Can you
a,
do it in a gym?
That's a good or
in the middle of a game,
right.
With you know no time left, and you're down by one, and you have to make this free throw.
Yeah.
With a million fans
so
screaming
the,
in favor or against.
I would like to play. So to me. Because I think PKs are a crapshoot, and so much of picking your order is psychological and all that. I really can't criticize Tata on that, but I do think that he made some mistakes with the selection. I don't think it made a difference, but I don't understand why you're subbing Martinez off so close to the penalty kicks. Jacob Peterson was not slotted in the first five. He's one of your best penalty takers. I understand if Martinez is tired, you want to take him off. It should have happened way earlier. The sub happened so close to penalties, you might as well just let him walk around and take one. So that's my first one I don't get.
Can I tell you what Tata said to that?
Yeah, please.
So he said that Joseph looked exhausted in his eyes, and he was trying to score so that they didn't have to go to PK. I think his words were something along the lines of
he had fresh legs on there to go for the goal.
I felt that we could have still had that game.
So that's the other side.
We still
of that.
Could have gotten a
sure.
goal out
and
of that game.
And he put Vijalba up top after they made that move, who looked very dangerous. So that's the two sides of the coin on that. The other one is Pires going second. So this one's a little
that one I didn't understand.
And
as
this
much.
One's difficult because he's a confident guy, and I like the idea, like you said, Jay, and like you said, Eric, that he asked everybody because at that point that's. Who wants to take it is a big part of it. Pires didn't look confident.
No, not going up
so
to the
I,
ball.
So I know that I'm speculating here, but if a guy like Pires, who's confident but appears to have not a lot of experience with penalties, tells you I want to go, maybe you say, I don't think so. I'm
going to
let
process
someone
still
else
learning
take
your players.
It.
You've never been in this situation before, so now you know.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But who was in the game at the time that could have taken a
Peterson?
I don't know if Carmona's good at penalties.
If Peterson's won, I think Kras was in the game as well.
No.
No.
I don't think so.
Mm-mm.
Just Peterson?
Just Peterson.
If Peterson doesn't volunteer, do you make him take a PK?
Right.
Because that's the thing.
And we don't know.
They may have thought, hey, Peterson, you want to take one? He's like, I hate these situations. Yeah. I cannot. I'm so bad at these situations.
Of course, then why do you sub him on with 5 minutes left? But I totally understand.
I mean,
Peterson would have taken that
game. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I hear you guys.
It's a weird, and that's the thing is you can turn in circles all day. But at the end of the day, what's comforting to me is Tata had answers for everything.
Yeah. So
even if he didn't agree with them, he wasn't. This guy knows what he's doing. This isn't like, well, I don't know, I just at the last minute we just figured it out. I don't know what's happening. But.
One thing that he did, and maybe he considered Laurentiwicz to be a more reliable penalty taker than Almirón.
The guy's been to playoffs. I mean, he's
putting your quote unquote best guy fifth is always a risk because it might not get that
far.
Hey,
they've done that with Ronaldo.
So you've seen
it
a lot of managers.
Seen it where,
he's done it with Messi.
You see it with Portugal.
He did it in Argentina. Yeah.
But also, with Ronaldo, he wants to be that guy to get the winning one.
He wants to go fifth, and you're not going to tell him what to do. But you'll see a lot of managers put their best guys first and fourth because you want to get to a good start, and you can assume you're going to make it four rounds of penalties, and you want your best guy there. Then there's statistical data that says put your guy second, which I think is a bit ridiculous. But you're always taking a risk when you put your best guy fifth. Again, I'm speculating because Laurentiwicz has taken penalties throughout his career, so maybe he thinks Laurentiwicz is a more reliable penalty taker and put him fourth. But those would be the three areas I think you could criticize are Martinez coming off right before penalty kicks, the Pires thing, as we've discussed,
and then
having Almirón going fifth. I agree with you guys on every single point, but I do think there is some legitimate reason to second guess him, particularly on Almirón going fifth and Martinez coming off.
But the way that game was going, I was totally fine with him going for the goal in extra time rather than trying to get
–
if you need to pull Martinez off because you think he's done for the night and he has nothing left to give you and you have a better option and throwing in Peterson
this
and switching things up top, do it.
After reading the quotes, and Eric, you presented some of them to me and I read some of them, I love Tata even more now. I mean,
me too.
He wants to – penalties are such a flawed. We keep saying crapshoot. He wants to win the game playing the game, and so in the 110th minute, he wants to go attack and get the goal. Whereas most teams, and Columbus did this, and most teams are fatigued and will sit back and bunker down for penalties. Not us. We're going for the win.
Yeah, I think we play that game three more times. I think we win 2 out of 3 of those times. I mean,
yeah.
What I tell you on the podcast before we got into this game, it's hard to beat a team three times in a row.
Right. Would you still rather play the New York Red Bulls after watching that match?
Watching them play, yeah. Absolutely.
After watching the Red Bulls,
absolutely
play their playoff match.
No, my thing is we're very focused on the PKs and rightly so. It's the first time we've been confronted with a situation like that, or the fans have at least experienced a situation
that. I mean, I wanted to talk about it.
And you're right. I think what we're failing to. I think there were too many opportunities missed in regulation. Anyone that's watched the game again or watched it in person knows.
If you two want to relive the match, I'll just sit here and listen to you guys.
Don't.
But to your point, Eric. So
but you can't miss those goals.
I thought this was an interesting statistic.
It was. But here's the thing. It's a perfect culmination of the entire season.
Are you going to talk about the combined goals?
Yeah.
So the
why are we talking about that?
No, it supports your point.
Because there were 4.32 expected goals in that match.
And what happened?
Most in a right.
That's why numbers are dumb.
That's why the teams weren't finishing.
Yeah, 2.27 for Atlanta and 2.05. It was a close. It was close.
It was the most since 2012 for a scoreless game over 90 minutes. So and basically. The statistics.
That's the only stat I wrote down for this entire thing.
Atlanta, both teams I thought played very well. Atlanta was a little bit better in every statistical category. So I will say one thing. I thought Columbus were fantastic. They came to play. They were attacking. Look what they're doing to New York in leg one.
They have figured out their identity right at the right time and just counterattacking team.
They're a good attacking team. So if all those guys hit form at the right time.
They're a totally different team. Like, I know as far as it's the same players, they brought in one new player, like, towards the end of the season. But they are playing 35% possession ball now.
Yeah.
They're not trying to play possession ball anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's totally changed their results as well.
They've lost, one or no matches in the last 2 months?
None in 12.
12,
I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about the MLS. You can just run onto a team in good form.
Unbeaten in 12.
We had kind of peaked a little too early, and you run into a team that's hitting the MLS playoffs. Yeah.
Well, my thing with this match was that, if you want to go back and relive it, feel free, but they allowed us to, kind of dabble in our weaknesses. So they really created a mess in the middle of the field. I mean, Martinez always looked like he was
counterattacking teams. Yeah. I mean,
it's not so much that. But look at the attack specifically. So Martinez was almost looked like he was in the way most of the time than anything else.
And we haven't mentioned his performance very much.
Especially in the last like 2 or 3 games or so. Yeah. But against Columbus specifically, he almost looked like he was in the way. Because of how the defenders were defending him, how they were taking away the middle of the field, and that left Villalba out wide, Assad out on the left, and especially early on, Villalba's crosses weren't super great. Not that that's his strength, but he was forced to play out wide, and he's okay, not great at doing that.
I thought their game plan was fantastic. I mean, they were every time that they lost the ball, they know the danger of Atlanta United getting in behind, and they were able to get behind the ball and organize so quickly.
Cannon the other way.
Well, we saw them do it to New York City. But
that's where I was frustrated with Martinez, though, because it's Martinez's job to make those runs in behind the defense and go direct, and yet
he was double teamed almost all the time.
You're right? And I'm not even saying pass it to him, but. Him making that initial through run or giving that initial movement is what's going to allow
that creates space
to open up and for the team to go direct. And it seemed like that wasn't happening. And it might not all be him, but we were just struggling to get in behind and go direct. And Columbus were getting behind the ball, and then we had to sit back
and hold it. The chemistry between Miggy and Joseph was not there.
Yeah, and I think a big I didn't think Miggy was quite sharp yet.
And when we saw Joseph struggling, it's been without Miggy the last couple times. And Miggy may have been back, but the flair that he showed in the Toronto match was not there for the entirety of the game.
Just didn't look sharp yet.
He's not fully match fit.
So speaking of Miggy, We can basically get off because we don't want to talk about Columbus anymore because it's too sad.
Never again. Yeah.
By the way, after that game, I was like, the Crew can go to hell.
Really? Most people I talk to are all in now.
I can't let the fairy tale continue.
So you'd rather root for New York Red Bulls or Toronto?
Those Canadian jerks? Go on to Austin.
Dumb faces?
Just ruined it for me. No, I didn't say Austin. I said
they're
hell.
Poutine-eating mofos?
No, but speaking of Miggy, lots of rumors circulating around about him and a potential move he may make to, at this point, two teams, Arsenal and Newcastle.
Arsenal wasn't even included in the last one, I thought. That was debunked.
It was just...
But, yeah. Anyways.
This is just coming from me.
Yeah.
And I have no insider knowledge. I have no belief that he's going anywhere until the end of next season at the very least. The way Tata Martino spoke about both his situation and Almiron's, specifically when he was asked if any players were leaving, I really don't think either of them are going anywhere.
I disagree.
It depends. I mean, one cool thing. I'm not confident.
The money would have to be something. I'll take that back. If the money's something stupid,
if
then
someone's
sure.
offering $23 million, you know, in
you
that range.
You also have to consider Almiron surely was not planning on coming to play for Atlanta for 3 years if he was playing well. I mean, he probably wants to go to Europe.
Now, his friendship with Joseph and other things that have
and I'm sure he
off
loves
the
it
field,
here.
We don't know how much that influences decision-making.
Right.
Quality of life versus
Newcastle.
What you have to do at Newcastle.
Right. Yeah. Well, hey.
Wonderful go, weather. Yeah.
I'm telling you, the only way he's leaving is if it is stupid money.
What's stupid money, though? That's $23 million, right? To me, is stupid money for stupid. MLS. Yeah. For MLS, that is record-breaking.
Hey,
it's not going to go to PSG.
What are you talking about? Someone's going to bring in $40 million for him? It's never going to happen.
You got to look at the investment and what you've gotten out of him and what you could get out of him in the future.
You still haven't told me what stupid money is.
Yeah, but
I don't know what stupid money is.
Then you don't
know
what you're talking about.
I'll know it when I see it.
Whatever.
It's like, what is it, pornography? You know when you see
stuff
it?
Up.
I don't know what stupid money is. I just know I know when I see it.
Well...
because
me,
I don't think anyone's going
to
offer stupid money.
To me, between $20 and $25 million is more than enough.
That is to MLS stupid money. I'll tell you right there.
the real
for the record for their average transfers of $5 to $7 million.
It may be stupid
at
most.
No,
it may be stupid money. It may be stupid for money for MLS. But is it stupid enough money for Arthur Blank to be like, all right, well, see you later.
I think if they could find a number 10,
I hope so. If it's that much,
here's the thing, right? If you sell him for $23 million, not only is that a record-breaking transfer, right? You could buy off Greg Garza's contract without question and Assad without worry. And so you would get the $8 million you paid back plus your salary, shared salary with the MLS, $1.5 million. I don't know if that's would actually, it's unclear if that would be before or after they cut it in a third, what's left over, the $11 million or $13 million left over. And then we get another $8-9 million from that pot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we could use that to buy the best number 10 MLS has ever seen. I don't know who that is. It would have to be someone that's available. It had to be the right circumstances. But if you think about it, Miggy's a number 8. He's not even a natural number 10.
Mm-hmm.
We've been playing him as a number 10.
Yeah.
You could bring Assad in and Carlton's his backup or put Andrew Carlton on the left or find or put Assad as our number 10 and find some sick player put on the left that with that kind of money. And then not only that, people are looking at you going, I will take your money, and I'm interested because that means I may go somewhere else like Miggy did.
And the main thing is the Atlanta United model is not sustainable if you're not selling those players.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying don't sell him eventually.
I don't think it's before next season. The thing is, we could sell him next summer. He stayed, like Jovan Jones, I believe, is for Seattle. And then he stays for the rest of the season. So we hypothetically sell him, but we still get another full season out of him. That's what I'm hopeful for.
Because what you're talking about is taking away a staple of the team. Like, it's a lot more than just the money's on the money on paper. It's so much more than that,
this is something every club goes through except for like four or five that can have unlimited money to spend in the world. And particularly with young talents, you have to cash in on them if you expect to get another Miguel Almirón. If you're losing guys like this for nothing, you would talk about Arthur Blank. He's going to say, I don't want to go spend $8 million on a dude in the U.S.
I'm going to be looking around and Googling and trying to find all the different number 10s we could bring in with that cash.
Well, I think you just go look at the Primera and look at Brazil and South America. I mean, having Tata Martino is the reason I can be comfortable.
What you guys are talking about is so hypothetical. I'm not willing to risk it over what could be one more year plus the money you could make off him after that next year.
I would say...
But you know this is the kind of stuff they're thinking about now.
But I'm not saying they're not thinking about
this. This is the stuff they're sitting in a boardroom discussing.
They're leaning very much no now.
And they should. And that's the posture you should take. But I think if an offer comes in January, that's too good to turn down. And certainly, I can't imagine Almirón. I mean, we talk about him liking Atlanta. I just can't imagine a player like that who's come here to basically audition to go to Europe suddenly saying... losing his ambition and wanting to stay in Atlanta. And that's no offense to Atlanta, but I see a lot of fans acting like he should want to stay. Miguel Almirón, this is the first year he's ever spent in this city. I'm sure he's thrilled with what's happened.
Look, we're already bringing in another 22-year-old with Franco Escobar, most likely.
Oh, we haven't mentioned that yet.
And, yeah. I mean, it's a verbal agreement or whatever. It's not official.
It's going to happen.
with Tata's connections and new old boys and his current coaches who were just fresh out of there, who know this guy from their academy. It seems like it's legit. And, you know, we're already bringing in a new right back, you know, which could potentially – I don't see Walk staying as an international slot if we bring another international, because we have to use two international slots. So he would have to go.
Garza wasn't one because he's technically
American.
Right?
Yeah, because he just plays for a Mexican team.
Yeah.
But you have Tijuana going bankrupt, so that, you know, is going to be something that could influence Greg Garza – either or, depending, could raise his price, depending on how they want to do it, or lower it. And we don't know what's going to happen with Assad, who's got like a $1.5 million potential price tag.
Right.
But if you bring in Franco, that's an international spot we got to get rid of. We got to get Walks. I assume that means that we're going to either bring up guys. Who's coming up from the academy that would – was anybody that would fill into that – I don't think there's anybody that would fill into that slot. Into that slot, yeah. It would be basically
not
Franco would be the right
year.
Back, because he's been a right back since 2015, apparently, Franco, even though they said center back / right back.
Okay.
And then you have Mears. So do we go find a better –
Mears is gone, guys.
Backup?
Probably.
Because his salary – you know, is
Mears
up there.
Mears makes no sense on this team.
McCann,
too much money
at $500,000 a year, does he stay because he's a utility? Now we know he's a utility player. Does he stick around?
Right.
I think he does.
He proved his value. I know we'll discuss this more on future podcasts, but we have a good core, but there are a lot of decisions that must be made this offseason that could see this team really decline or get even better.
Which is why I don't think Mickey's going anywhere, because he's going to be part of that fabric that
I hope
moves
you're right.
into the next season.
I hope you're right.
Hopefully Assad, Martinez.
And I'm saying that if $20 million came in, they wouldn't just automatically say yes, but they would go and look and say, is there a number 10 that we can buy for millions and bring in?
And the thing is, if you turn down in that offer and you say, no, you're staying, you're going to be dealing with an unsettled Miguel Almirón.
And that's not
anyway.
How Daniels put it. He said the decision's going to be fair to the player and the team simultaneously.
And I think that's
right?
what Atlanta United is. It's, look, come here.
So if we could find a number 10 that's going to just wreck MLS expectations in terms of the amount of money brought in for a young player, you know, we could bring in some exciting number 10.
Look,
then Mickey's going out the door. Sorry.
There are a lot of very talented.
I mean, Mickey's amazing.
But
there are
America.
Some talented number 10s that's their job that are better than Mickey.
And we have Tata Martino.
That would cost more money than Mickey. You know what I mean?
And Tata Martino can say, look, this guy came here for a year. Now he's playing in La Liga.
Not only are we going to pay European salaries.
Pay you more. Yep. Less pressure.
But then you can
what more do you
potentially
want?
Go somewhere else in a year or two.
Absolutely.
Do we want to save the tape here and just replay this next year when we figure out when we eventually know?
I hope these tapes
are all burned.
He's not
from
leaving.
All of our podcasts.
I'm saying he's not leaving until after however it works out.
The question is, when will he be sold?
You're so ambiguous. I don't care about that.
You're so ambiguous. You're like,
after year two.
It's got to be stupid money, and he's going whenever he goes. What are you talking about? We're saying he's either going, he's being sold, and he will not be with us in the spring, or he's going to be sold in the summer, you know, and stay with us.
And hopefully stays.
Or be sold next fall.
Yeah, see, he might be sold in the summer, but I think he ends up staying up until the end of year two.
So you think he plays another full season?
It's either that or he just fully stays until year two and gets sold in that next summer. In the next,
either way, you're saying he's staying a full season.
I think he's staying in an entire another season.
And I think I'm 50-50 on it, like Josh.
And the key really to me is, you know, as a fan,
first of all, look through January. Look at the outlets reporting this news.
Oh, well, first, it's absolute let's crap. Start with the ridiculousness. Okay, so there's two sides to this, right? There's Willie Go, and then what? This Newcastle rumor that's been going around today started from a two-sentence news story. Our own Joe Patrick transited this down with no byline, and now it's all over the Twitter
field. This is kind of back when Joe Patrick tracked down the translation, the mistranslation of Joseph talking about years ago about Tottenham.
Right, right. I'm telling you, the silly season is insane.
Do you want to know the perfect example of this?
The Newcastle rumor is BS.
It's exactly what's going on with Tata Martino right now. He has not... very likely has not been officially offered the U.S. men's national team job.
No, right. Yeah. Right.
He's been approached by someone with U.S. soccer and said, hey, Tata, listen, if we were to offer to you,
right,
what would you think?
Or maybe talk to his
agent. And he just said, nah, I'm good. Maybe, I'm good where I am.
Yeah. Maybe when those U-17s come of age.
That's not an official offer. Tripping. That's not even an offer. That's a let's just check the temperature and see what he says.
Yeah.
Before we officially ask him, and he officially says no.
Right.
Someone ran it as, oh, he told him no.
Right. Like they had the contract and offered
exactly.
It to him.
He told him no. He refused him. That's not even close to what happened.
Because my understanding is that U.S. soccer hasn't even decided officially, like with each other, what they're looking for in a new manager.
Or to find friendly matches.
So how did Tata, and you know, it's such an easy rumor for the media to run with. You know, he's obviously a world-class manager, but he's also the kind of flavor of the year domestically, doing so well in MLS, playing great soccer. That's an easy story. That's an easy story to essentially make up. But I will say this: Tata there one day,
especially since he was asked at the last press conference. He was asked something to the effect of, if it came around, and he said that, you know, look, I've got a contract with Atlanta United that runs up through next year.
Yeah.
Possibly 2 years after that, and he spoke about those 2 years. He said possibly, the way he spoke about it made me seem that he wants to be here long term.
Certainly over the U.S. men's national team.
Certainly.
I mean,
I don't think he wants anything to do with the U.S.
Plus, we all know Sam Allardyce is going to take over.
Right.
I don't think he wants anything to do with the national team program just because he's done that twice now.
And I think
both of them have. Well, Paraguay was fine, but Argentina was more or less a, you know.
Well, to people in Argentina, it was a failure.
it was tough.
Right, you know.
And I don't think he wants to deal with that. I think he wants to be able to coach on an everyday basis. Yeah. And he can do that with Atlanta. And he can do that with – I mean, everything is perfect for Tata here.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like people don't understand that the quality of life here is perfect.
Dude, he is our Arsene Wenger. He has full control.
The facilities and the money.
The first 10 years are going to be awesome.
Although he does have a technical football director.
Yeah, right. He's got Bocanegra. And a better owner.
You walk in there and say no to Tata, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean, the facilities, the money it's all the young players. It's all perfectly set up for him to succeed. And why would you want to leave?
Like,
just because you've been offered the Chile national team spot or the U.S. men's national team spot, and you're going to make all this extra money. He's already making a ton of money.
And Tata didn't need to come to Atlanta United.
No,
he wanted to come to Atlanta United.
Why would he leave after a year?
He's managed Barcelona. He's managed Argentina.
Get off this mindset that they want to go to the most prestigious thing. That's not always the case.
Managers in particular.
That's not always the case.
If you look at Tata's career as a manager, it seems clear that he enjoys managing at smaller clubs, and he made it to the big time with Barcelona
and he didn't like
and
it.
Argentina.
And he's openly said that he did not like his time at Barcelona.
Right? Yeah. And, I mean, I thought we can talk about that another time. I thought he was treated unfairly at Barcelona. But I mean, I think Tata is a guy. He's very set in his ways. He's obviously an excellent manager, and he wants to go put his. You know, he said when he came here, I want to build an add to the soccer culture in America. And with respect to the U.S. men's national team job, I think he can change the culture here just as much as Atlanta United as he can with them. Because when you're the manager of the national team, all you're doing is getting the guys that come to you. You know, with Atlanta United, he can be part of the academy. He can be part of changing the style of play domestically in the league. And he can have that impact on the game culturally and philosophically that he wants to. I think more so managing Atlanta United than he would managing the U.S. men's national team at this point in time. 4 or 5 years down the road, let's see what happens. But
plus,
for now, this is the perfect spot for him.
He gets so many free tracksuits.
Well, best dressed.
So many tracksuits.
Best dressed.
I get off this mindset that he wants to go on to the next best thing. This is a really amazing thing that he has here.
We're not saying
that as homers. We're not saying that as homers. You look at the facts, and that's just it is what it is. Another piece of news that came out after the unfortunate loss to Columbus: Atlanta United's gonna be changing their secondary kits in 2018, guys. The lime green ATL, the highlighter green ATL jerseys.
I think it should be
like
bright.
Guzan.
That's the old
bright,
school of Hawks alternates.
Bright pink.
Bright pink.
Bright pink.
Like a Palermo.
Which ones?
Arsenal's away kits.
Oh yeah.
If you can remember, which ones did you like? Which secondary kits did you like that you happened to see before the season began?
You mean MLS?
No. Atlanta United specifically.
Oh, you mean
the secondary
mock-ups?
Kits. Yeah.
Mock-ups.
What did I say?
You said kits in general. Secondary kits
the
in general.
I figured everyone assumed that mock-up.
The world? Yeah. I honestly don't even know what the options were for the road kit. I'm glad they didn't change the home strip, though, because
they can only change one every other year. Well, if they wanted to, they could have changed that and kept the secondary. But
okay.
Well, no, they can.
Yes, they could have changed the primary. But they chose to change the secondary.
They couldn't change both. Can they still add an alternate?
That's out of their pocket. Yeah, they can if they wanted to. It would be out of their pocket.
And that usually has a lot to do with sponsors.
MLS buys you pays for you as part of your pool. Whatever
gotcha.
You pay,
okay.
Yeah, as far as your franchising is concerned. So
well, the concrete and strawberries going away. I don't know. I mean,
which I never wore it, by the way. Once it's still hanging in my closet.
Yeah, I mean,
it never felt right on me. It never looked right on me. Like I mean, it looked good on skinny people. I just did not feel good in it. Like I like the stripes. It kind of
it lengthens you.
They're slimming. So I hope
five stripes.
If they're gonna make something, I hope it's something really bizarro, like pink and black or
get creative with it.
Pink and gold or something crazy.
Yeah.
Have fun with it. Yeah.
Like you want to go. Like you don't want to go
pink
like Columbus
gold.
Urine stain on the front?
Why would you? That's not even part of our colors.
I'm sure. Look.
Pink is not either. But I think it's better than
real quickly
yellow. Anything yellow. Listen, I've already got enough trouble with the yellow and the armbands. And everybody's like, "This is your fault. You wore the armbands and we lost."
Oh, save the crew!
Save the crew armbands. Blah blah blah. And you know why? I know why we lost. I'll tell you why we lost. Because I went on 92.9. They had their tent down there at the tailgate, and I went up there with a couple other guys from the other supporters groups, and I stood there half an hour before the game, and I said, you know what? I don't believe in the Dread God. I believe in Tata Martino and Tito Villalba. That's why we lost.
Damn it, Jay!
I don't care.
Damn it, Jay!
Eat it.
So it's your fault.
Why?
Save the crew. So it wasn't the yellow armbands.
I don't know why we were talking about all this if it's just your fault. Why did we bother talking about penalty selection?
We're kicking him off the group chat.
I said it live on the air on a radio station.
He's never coming
broadcast
on this podcast
all across the city.
Ever again.
No, I love it, Jay. You treated the Dread God like Tata treats penalty kicks.
The Dread God made you
his
bitch.
We don't have to prepare for this. We're going to go win it on our own.
So
we'll show him next year.
You know what?
God.
But I can take the heat. I can shoulder it. That's why I can take it on.
I'm just mad we wasted our whole time talking about this.
I will carry this loss for everyone. That's why it's just
like
a big rock.
Breaking things down and discussing.
Pushing it around.
And here we had the answer to our problems.
Here I came with my expected goal stats and all that.
Yeah.
And it really is just his fault.
I meant to say something earlier, but I forgot.
We should just cut the entire 30 minutes. I should have put it in my Evernote. Of the-
mention you are the cause of our season failure.
So wrapping up here, moving forward, we're going to keep doing a podcast once a week. Is that okay with you guys?
You want to do quick team awards?
Oh, yeah. Let's go through them.
Okay, so we're going to be different. So we won't call MVP because it always ends up being offensive player anyway. So we're going to call offensive player of the year.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
So quickly, we'll go around each time. And I don't think much of these are – there's probably maybe a couple that we may debate. But for the most part, I think that's pretty much we're going to be on point. So it'll be interesting to see what we have to say. So, Josh, offensive player of the year.
It's got to be Almiron. Goals, assists, work rate, brings everything together. We saw the importance of – him from the attacking standpoint when he was out with the hamstring injury. Martinez is another guy that could be there, but he missed so much of the season. For me, it's absolutely 100% Miguel Almiron.
I'm also Miggy.
I'm Martinez.
Surprised you didn't say Villalba.
More than anything, yeah.
More because without Martinez, we struggle.
Here's
more.
The thing. I look back at that highlight video, yeah. And you can see half of Villalba's goals are
product
of right place, right time.
We can't get through a podcast. Just saying, yeah, well, how many goals are like that anyway?
No, I'm not saying you're not right, but...
Martinez, because
and look, I'm not saying you guys are... I mean, look,
It's one of those two.
If it's left up to an ultimate decider, either one would be fine with me. But, having him gone and seeing how Atlanta struggled with him not in the lineup, and then when he came back, how well they performed. I mean, that alone to me was enough to make him the offensive player of the year, in my book at least. The way he scored goals, the amount of goals he scored. It's a shame that he wasn't in the conversation on the last day for – Golden Boot.
Yeah.
I think at the very least,
I know
he should have been there. But don't take 3 months off because of a quad injury.
Yeah, don't go play in the cow pastures of every pitch in South America. According to Jay, is a cow pasture.
Here come the emails.
Direct Jay Riddle quote.
Real quick, we had some delayed responses for we were talking about the kit. So some people want to see white and gold, which seemed, I don't know. It's like white
and gold. Is that a thing?
It is. It could be a thing. I just think white's boring. But...
White and gold? See, the numbers are going to be so hard to see, though.
Well, they could figure it out by doing black outlines around it, stuff like that. They could figure it around it, make
white
it look
and
good.
Gold.
But
black is not an Atlanta United color.
What?
Black is not an Atlanta United color.
What is then?
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
We had strawberry on our secondary one.
Chris from Iron Tooth has some designs out there. He does say that I think this is to you, Eric, that his ATL and green kit is still available for stealing.
Get to work, Chris.
So I need Chris, make me like a pink one, like the color that
it's a mock-up. It's called
that,
a mock-up.
Yeah, that That's Arsenal uses in their away kits.
For real, if you have time, make a Mouths of the South themed Atlanta.
That one's gonna that's gonna be cost you.
When you have time.
But
I know that you do good work.
Just do it.
You work hard.
Chris is gonna invoice this for that.
We deserve it. We deserve it.
On to defensive player of the year.
I thought about this for a little bit. I think you guys are gonna say Pierre to me it's Jeff Laurentiis.
You don't know me. I was stealing my stuff.
Oh man, I'm sorry.
Oh
my God. I know that's kind of hot takey.
No, it isn't. It's
not
at all.
It's really not though.
It's a similar.
The guy slots in anywhere. He's moved around.
It's like the LeBron Jordan conversation.
It's similar to the argument you were making about Martinez in terms of when he was not in that spot. It was a complete
different
team.
Which is only a few times.
And even when he moved to center back from that CDM spot, you could see the difference. The team lost the balance through the middle. Jeff Laurentiis' defensive work is the reason we had our attacking players had the freedom that they did.
Yeah, and part of it is without Carmona, he wouldn't be able to do that stuff either. So I understand where people say Carmona or LGP, but Laurentiis, just the eye test for me. I don't care about the stats.
Yeah.
I'm watching the game, and I'm watching this guy just body people, get in front of him, get the head on the ball. There's so many opportunities where if he wasn't there, somebody would have been in on goal.
He saved our bacon so many times when counters were coming. Yep.
What about you, Eric?
Is it cheating if I say Brad Guzan?
No, well, why not?
Look at the whole defense changed.
Exactly why. Because he showed up in this back line, the entire shape of the back line, everything about the defensive aspect of Atlanta United changed. And it changed immediately, and it was for the better. It was such a difference. And to me, that was enough for me to – I mean –
Yeah,
for me that's it. I mean, that if you need one thing that changed the season for Atlanta United in a positive way outside of especially in the second half of the season, it's Brad Guzan entering this team and changing the way this team played defensively, or at least how they looked more organized, how they played more organized, how they seemed to mark so much better. That I mean, I know that he made a ton of good saves.
Good with his feet too.
And
there
his
was
tongue.
Something. It was. Yeah. Dirty. I wish we had a drop or something. But no, it's not even about the saves he made. He made a ton of good saves. And it's funny to think now, looking back, at how much a lot of Atlanta United fans dreaded the fact that he was coming to Atlanta United.
His shutouts made like $24,000 for the Mercy Children's Hospital or whatever. That's crazy.
Love it, Children's Mercy.
Yeah, but I agree. I mean, look at my Twitter profile. Immediately after the playoff match, I made it Guzan looking a pumpkin to be festive. So yeah, I agree. I think that's a great one. I think I've never heard anyone say the Renowitz yet. And I've never heard anything Guzan. It's all been LGP or Carmona.
You know, Eric, you said, and we talked about it a lot, that we weren't uneasy, but that's tough to integrate a new goalkeeper in the middle of mid-season.
I was scared.
And especially in a system that requires your goalkeeper to get on the ball and
distribute
with
his feet. Because my thing is, I have no idea how he's going to do. And he did fantastic. Yeah. He did so much better than I expected.
We got to move on. Biggest surprise. Positive.
For me, it was Anton Walkes. Particularly the way that he started. The first few times I saw him at center back, he played in the opener, a tough spot for him, comes on for Pires, scores the own goal. And he played, I believe, center back in the Open Cup match against Charleston as well. And I thought he was awful. Uncomfortable, not good on the ball, didn't move well. And when I saw him at right back, was it the San Jose match? I can't remember. I was like, I can't believe that we're seeing this guy instead of Bloom. And he developed into an effective right back in Tata Martino's system that demands so much from your fullbacks. And then even looked good when he went back to center back late in the season when we went with the back three. So for me, it's Anton Walkes, close second. Alec Kann, a guy that I think has established himself as an MLS backup keeper that was a three or even a four coming into this season. So Kann, a close second, but Anton Walkes, I can't say enough about the improvements he made throughout the season.
I'm going to say Assad because I simply was reading about how he struggled at his club.
Yeah, he had a lot of criticism.
And he had a lot of criticism coming in, and I didn't know anything about him, so I didn't really have any expectations. So to see him and just his ability to slot in for at times for Miggy when he wasn't there and play that traditional number 10 role, and then just he was impressive. He really impressed me this year. I could definitely think his $1.5 million price tag is definitely worth it now.
Absolutely.
So
to me, it's easily Gressel.
A lot of surprises this year.
The day of the draft, I asked Atlanta United if I could grab one of the two. You know, either Miles Robinson or well, I was hoping for Miles, but they gave me Julian, and I'm thinking, great, I'm about to do an interview with someone who's probably never going to see the field,
right?
Who's never going to see the line.
Wow, Miles Robinson.
Yeah. I was like, oh, give me Robinson.
Little did I know. Thank you, Chris Winkler. But no, I literally am sitting there talking to him, thinking, this is such a waste of time. Why am I? And he could not have proven me more wrong, obviously. And just to see his progression from, because remember, there was a while where he, you know, sat the bench for a little bit.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't playing well. To see his progression throughout this year, to see him contribute the ways he's contributed, if he doesn't win MLS Rookie of the Year, then I rescind all my votes. Or
You can go take a hike.
But
get out of here.
To me, he was the biggest surprise and the biggest pleasant surprise. I loved watching him play. I loved his hustle. I loved specifically the times where he was taking the ball down to the end line and. Crossing it in at tough angles.
And on any other day, he probably would have been the hero scoring the first penalty kick.
Yeah.
I mean, so close. Most disappointing player of the year.
Well, this is easy.
why don't you start, Eric? Because I know what you're going to say, and I want to think of someone else.
I was going to jokingly say Tito, but I don't think he's not been disappointing.
Because he made you look dumb? Is that why he's disappointing?
No.
You have not met my expectations, Tito Vajaba, making me look silly.
He wasn't disappointing. He was just, I want a little more consistent. I got more consistency out of him in the latter half of the season
you're talking like you're playing him like FIFA. You're like, I got some more consistency out of him when I play him.
The thing is, you just didn't know what to expect. You didn't know what kind of Tito you're going to get night in, night out in the first half of the season. You just didn't know. Yeah. Biggest disappointment? I don't know, Zach Lloyd. Because he just disappeared.
Kenwin Jones. That's what I figure you're going to say.
Kenwin Jones is my biggest disappointment because I thought he was going to be a staple of this team. I thought he was going to be a guy that they built around. If not, they were going to be a guy that they could rely on, 60 minutes in or and he was basically nothing, in my opinion.
Sure.
He was It's not. I can't really fault anyone because look, the team thought that he was going to be a guy that they could they were going to pay to be a staple on this team before they hired Tata. This was before they even thought Tata was even a possibility. I'm sure if they had any indication that a guy like Tata Martino, not even Tata Martino himself, a guy like Tata Martino
really
with that kind of style,
yeah,
they wouldn't have made that hire at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he just did so little after being one of the first signings. Was he the first signing? I forget. Who was the first?
Yeah, he was the first, but yeah, he was before Tito was the first.
Tito was the first, yeah. Okay. To be one of the first signings and to assume that he was gonna be part of that first team going forward and to literally contribute as little as he did, that was disappointing. Yeah.
Okay.
And not really his fault. It's just the product of the system. I'm not blaming him, the player, but that was disappointing. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, my most disappointing is, and I know he did make some improvements towards the end of the year, but I think Mears is.
Oh man, I got no one left now. I shouldn't have said go last.
I think Mears. He. Listen, if you lose your spot and you're brought in to be the starter, you're a disappointment. Like, yeah. Sorry, you lost your spot.
I'm honestly not sure how you can defend Mears or how you can argue Mears over Walks. And we've had a lot of that on Twitter lately.
Oh, in terms of who starts?
I don't understand how you can do that. After watching the two play and watching one take over the other, I don't know how.
That's not a debate.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
To piggyback off your point with Mears, Jay, not only do you lose your starting spot, you lose it to a 19-year-old natural center back.
Did he turn 20 this year? I don't remember.
Did he turn 20? All right. Well, he's one of those young, you know, he can't drink
Give
yet.
Mears the credit that he turns 20.
But, yeah.
Mears. Dude, you're forgetting his birthday.
Yeah, so I was...
He's 20 now, not 19.
I was gonna say Mears, too. Like you said, Jay, comes in to start, gets that big assist the opening night against New York Red Bulls, and then kind of disappears. And just his energy, and he didn't seem to be enjoying himself.
He would have single-handed. He lost us thousands of fans because I think he slowed the game down.
Yeah,
that
it was
much.
Unbelievable. Like, no, so like, much, like so much were, so that a center back.
I felt like
instead.
If we kept him on the field, we'd
his
have
crossing
we'd
sucked, have, his defending sucked,
we'd have
his
5,000 less supporters coming to watch the match because they feel like the game's so slow.
It's definitely him or Kenwin. For me, it's not Kenwin because I didn't expect a ton out of Kenwin anyway.
I didn't either.
Wrong side of 30. He's always had issues with work rate, fitness. Never been a consistent goal scorer. He's a big name.
Do you have a long list that you're reading right now off?
No. Oh. You don't know about Kenwin Jones?
He took these things called
I watch soccer constantly.
No, I thought you were just reading a list of disappointments you had with him off the list.
No, but that's the only reason I don't say Kenwin, because if you look at salary versus performance, it's clearly him. I just didn't have really high expectations in the first place.
Tim Backus was the first signing. I always forget about Tim
Backus.
Yeah, poor Tim Backus.
You know what the great thing about this? I go through the whole roster, and the only two guys that really jump out me as disappointments are Mears and Jones. You got some young guys that didn't see a lot of minutes.
And think about that for a second. For an expansion team to miss on two players and only, other than the depth guys that ended up not really seeing much out of, but to really only miss on two players, that's pretty amazing.
And the frustrating thing now is they have to figure out who they want to protect for the expansion draft and all
that
stuff.
And we'll get into that later on.
Whereas if they had six guys that were nobody, that they were like, these guys were terrible, that makes the decision making much easier.
Yeah, you're so right. And you're so right, Eric. It's a minor miracle that you build a team from scratch and miss on like two guys. I mean, that's unfathomable.
Yeah.
And that includes academy players top to bottom. I mean, I don't know how they did it.
So many guys are going to get minutes next year. Anyways.
Any other ones?
Most, this is the last one. Most likely to cover for you if your girl calls looking for you.
Or whoever, your significant other.
Right. So you could go a number of different ways this way because, you know, a number of the guys from South America hang out together or you could just go by their character and how you think you would roll if you went, you know, if you rolled with them just out for a night and you told them to tell your girl if they call that you're with them.
Oh, I see. It's not. I thought you meant they lie about where you are to your. They're the person you say I'm with this guy who is.
No,
not,
they're the ones that get the phone call and they got to lie to your girlfriend.
Okay, so this is the liar. Okay, got it. Go ahead, Eric. We should do one of these every week. Some sort of ridiculous category like that.
So what is it like the Renowitz? Because here's why. Because he's so when we interview him, he's very just direct, straight to the point, and rather emotionless when he responds. And so I feel like if my girl called him and he's like, hey, where's Eric right now? Like,
the crusty old
yo, he's right
MLS
here.
MLS veteran.
Yeah. What do you want?
What do you want? Go away.
Why are you calling me?
Yeah.
Hang up. The other one is Perez, because I feel like he just deflect.
Well, also, imagine he has an alibi, a good alibi, because he's always talking about how he's inviting the guys over because he likes to grill.
Yeah, exactly.
So they all are grilling.
It's just a guy's night. It's just a guy's night. Okay.
My answer is Bobby Boswell.
You're in big trouble there.
That guy can spin a yarn, but it's also a risk because, you know, at that point your girlfriend may also know he's full of it.
So. Yeah, it depends how well she knows the boss.
Yeah.
I love the Laurentiwitz, professional, top to bottom. I also like Brad Guzan, who has developed a reputation for giving horribly boring, bland quotes to the media, which is whatever. Josh can do what he wants. I can't handle this guy, you know. But great. This is another one I went down the roster. I was like, not him.
I think if we want to flip the question a little bit.
Don't call Assad, I'll tell you that.
Assad is spilling the beans. Tito's spilling the beans.
Like 90% of these guys.
Almiron. He won't respond.
Start crying.
He won't say anything. He'll just get really quiet.
Yeah, really quiet.
Martinez
would
just steal your girlfriend. Probably.
Here's the thing. Martinez would be like, "What? Nope," and walk away.
You would hear Miggy's smile turning into a frown over the phone. Like you,
Parker's. I wish. I mean, obviously we're not on video, but
Parker's would not lie for you.
He'd do one of these. And this is terrible for a podcast, but he'd do one of these.
Well,
Parker's wouldn't cover for you.
Pretty.
Parker's would call you and say, "Don't ever put me in this position."
Tata would make a joke and just walk and change the subject.
No English. Yeah, just high press. Yeah, good night.
Driving, who else?
Enough from Tata.
Walks would just mesmerize the girl with his accent.
Ken
Wynn.
Walks is another Mr. Steal Your Girl.
His accent. No way. His accent is.
No, I'm not letting Anton Walks talk to my girlfriend.
Yeah, don't let him talk to your ladies.
I don't have a girlfriend, but hypothetically.
That's all I got, though, guys, for the team awards. So.
Cool. Well, let's wrap it up. We're going to try to keep these under an hour from now on just because of the offseason. I mean, I guess we don't have to, but.
We try our best, but we all talk a lot.
For the next podcast, we're going to try to, if the conversation continues, we're going to really dive into this Walks Mears debate, especially if nothing's changed when it comes to, I don't expect anything to change between now and next week or the week after. A look back at the players we were expecting nothing from and got a lot out of, and how we kind of grade them. So I'm talking about like Guzan, Gressel. We talked a little bit about it today. Walks, McCann, who you could maybe argue the opposite. Kenwin Jones, who we talked a little bit about today. Laurentiwitz, and we'll dive into a lot of the playoff stuff next time on the podcast next week.
Save the crew.
Well.
Eric he haven't said one thing about Orlando this entire time, and you're over there just spewing vitriol at the poor crew.
By the way, you guys never asked me my favorite goal.
Oh, yeah.
And my favorite goal was Tito's against Orlando. So congratulations, Tito.
The one in Orlando.
The one in Orlando, yeah. Honestly, both.
Yeah.
But the one in Orlando
was special. Yeah.
I pooped myself.
Yeah, I'm with that.
All right, that wraps it up. Any final thoughts?
I just can't wait for more juicy nuggets next week.
I'll be prepared with a lot of juicy nuggets for everybody next week. Josh's juicy nuggets.
I'm not coming back.
Well, sounds like it's just you and me, Eric.
We're going to likely introduce a new guest to the co-host on the podcast next week. And until next time, see you later, Lana.
Bye.